Today, the recession obsession. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one that is posted covering finance properties with a distinctively Australian flavour. In our weekly market update, we look at the US markets first, go across Europe and across Asia, and head up in Australia. And Wall Street ended little changed on Friday after a volatile session in which investors tried to comprehend how a robust jobs report would influence the US Federal Reserve and its plans to aggressively hike interest rates. I'm calling this period right now a recession obsession, BMO Capital Markets chief investment strategist Brian Belsky said. Institutional investors are not positioned for any kind of upside move. That's why you are seeing these sharp moves on the day like today, and certainly over the last few days in terms of a short squeeze. We remain positive and think people are way too negative. Atlanta Fed President Rafael Bostic, until recently among the central bank's most dovish policymakers, said on Friday that he fully supports another 75 basis point rate rise later this month. And speaking later on Friday, New York Federal Reserve President John Williams did not specify if he favoured a half point or three quarter point increase in the Fed's upcoming July meeting, but acknowledged rising interest rates were affecting the economy. The Labour Department's closely awaited data showed non-farm payrolls rose by 372,000 jobs in June. That was higher than the estimate of around 268,000. The report also showed the jobless rate remained near pre-pandemic lows at 3.6%, and average hourly earnings rose 0.3% after a gain of 0.4% in May. The U6 unemployment rate, that's a broader measure that includes discouraged and underemployed workers, fell in June to its lowest level in data back to 1994, suggesting that layoffs and dismissals remain rare. Employers have been struggling for months to hire qualified workers and retain the ones they already have as demand for labour outstrips supply. The participation rate, that's the number of people entering the jobs market, fell 0.1%. This suggests the supply of labour will continue to be constrained, and the wage pressure that has been building up doesn't look as if it's going to abate anytime soon, said Dean Smith, chief strategist at Folio Beyond. The strong report, Morgan Stanley said, offers, quote, support for a 75 basis point hike at the July FOMC. While on the surface wage growth appeared to cool slightly, average hourly earnings for production and non-supervisory workers actually surged again in June. Wages among that group jumped by 0.5% for a second straight month and climbed 6.4% from a year earlier, underscoring how businesses are increasing pay to attract and retain applicants. This implies continued flattening in the income distribution, with more dollars going to consumers with higher propensity to spend, thus making it harder for the Fed to reduce demand, said Anita Mowasky, chief economist at Jefferies. Data earlier this week from a separate Labour Department report also showed US job openings dipped slightly in May, but remained near a record of 11.3 million. That translates to 1.9 jobs for every unemployed person in that month, a measure of labour market tightness touted by Federal Chair Jerome Powell, who has said the economy can withstand aggressive rate hikes without toppling into recession. Recent survey data also captured painstaking efforts to bring new employees aboard. The Institute of Supply Management's employment indices in both the manufacturing and services industries dropped in June to their lowest levels since the early months of the pandemic recovery. Combine that with what's expected to be another fiery inflation print. Consumer prices in June are forecast to set a fresh record four-decade high when released next week, and it's full steam ahead for the Federal Reserve. Economists and traders broadly expect the central bank to raise interest rates by another 75 basis points this month to rein in demand across the economy, and several Fed officials have already endorsed such a move. After this report, you can pretty much count on 75 basis points in July, said Jim Caron, chief fixed income strategist with Morgan Stanley. The job market is strong and it's not giving up any growth. Despite the bumpy nature of the day, though, the Nasdaq posted its fifth straight gain, its longest winning streak since the beginning of November, and all three benchmarks finished solidly up for the week, which was, of course, shortened by the Independence Day holiday. After a brutal first half of the year, US stock markets started July on a solid footing as investors took relief from easing commodity prices and the Fed hinting at a more tempered program of rate hikes amid concerns of a recession. We think the market has right-sized itself somewhat and will continue to adjust around the edges as we see macro data and as we work our way through earnings seasons, said Mike Lucas, chief executive of Trumark Investments. Now it's a matter of people trying to figure out where the entry point is and where the bottom is, or if we are close to it. Investors, though, remain nervy, sifting through each piece of data and commentary from Fed governors to see how this might influence the US central bank's plans to dramatically shift rates higher. So this resulted in seesaw trading on Friday, with all three main benchmarks experiencing periods in positive and negative territory. The market suspects when you start to see truly strong signs of the Fed relaxing its path of rate increases and leading indicators picking up, we'll probably get a pretty good upward movement in the market. And no one wants to miss that, said Derek Uzel, Chief Investment Officer at Shelton Capital Management. So we're going to have this volatility as we have had all these false starts along the way. With the earnings season around the corner, investors will of course focus on company forecasts as well as the key inflation data expected next week to gauge the health of the economy. And at the end of the week, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 0.15% to 31,338. The S&P 500 lost 0.08% to 3,899. And the NASDAQ Composite added 0.12% to 11,635. For the week, the NASDAQ gained 4.5%. The S&P and the Dow advanced 1.9% and 0.8% respectively. And Treasury yields jumped following the report, with the 10-year rising back above 3%. And growth sectors of the market, like consumer discretionary, though, were under pressure, though Tesla and home builders did add support. Tesla was up by more than 2% after the electric vehicle maker sold a record number of EVs in China in the second quarter. Twitter, though, meanwhile, was a drag on tech following a report that Elon Musk's $44 billion take private deal is in serious jeopardy, as the billionaire remains wary about fake accounts on the social media platform. It fell nearly 5%. Musk's reluctance to move forward with the deal has many speculating that the billionaire is angling for a cut-price deal to acquire the company. The Twitter soap opera is clearly coming to some sort of finale over the coming months, as Musk makes the decision to stay with a lower price or go, Wedbush said, adding that the odds of a deal proceeding at the $54.20 a share price was around 5%. Housing stocks, including Pulte Group, D.R. Holton, and Lenore Corporation, which had all been battered by worries about demand as mortgage rates jump, were also among the top gainers. Levi Strauss ended up 1% after the jeans maker reported quarterly results that topped Wall Street estimates, and big tech traded mixed, with Apple and Alphabet slightly higher, while Meta Platforms and Microsoft traded in the red. In other news, GameStop fell 4.87% after the video game retailer said it had fired its chief financial officer and is laying off staff across the company as it looks to execute a turnaround plan. The broader market's rally this week was helped by hopes that recent economic data pointing to softening in the economy would persuade the Fed to consider a less hawkish path. But there are warns that those bets are premature. The fight against inflation is still in earnings innings, and there's a lot to do for the Fed to do. People who bought the rally in the last couple of weeks are going to be really unhappy. On Wednesday, July the 13th, the US Bureau of Statistics will release those widely anticipated inflation data sets for May. Headline CPI, the Consumer Price Index, is expected to register an 8.7% year-on-year growth, up slightly from the previous 8.6% reading. Plus, S&P 500's quarterly earnings are expected to be significantly down from the last quarter, and expected or worse than expected average earnings could lead to new market corrections. So next week will be essential for the market's trajectory through the rest of 2022. Given that we're already 5 months since the S&P 500's most recent peak, and 1 month since the index entered a bear market, a recession may be on the horizon. Theoretically, we could already be in one, because of course the NBER declares official beginnings many months after they already started. Of course, such cases are unique, and this time may be different. However, there are important reasons to worry. After all, the stock market dived due to the Fed's tightening cycle, initiated to curb high inflation. Although necessary to tame upward price pressure, it could trigger a recession. The last three economic downturns and bear markets in equities were preceded by hikes in the federal funds rate. Well, bear markets that accompany recessions are generally positive for gold, of course, yet gold is sitting below 1,750 at the moment, and some would argue we could be close to the bottom of the gold market, but if there is an asset sell-off when investors scramble for cash, needed to fulfill their obligations and cover their margin calls, then the yellow metal could decline even further. European stocks edged higher on Friday with the DAX in Germany up 1.35% to 13,015. The CAC 40 in France was up 0.44% and the UK's FTSE was up 0.1% as Boris Johnson announced his intention to resign as British Prime Minister, easing the political chaos in the UK, but maybe nothing to be seen soon there in terms of settling down. So European indices have rebounded to a degree this week after the brutal sell-off in the first half of the year, with investors trying to shake off concerns about that looming recession. But central bank actions are keeping them on the edge of their seats as they try to assess the impact of aggressive rate hikes on global growth. In corporate news, BMW stocks fell 0.4% after the German auto giant sold over 13% fewer vehicles in the first half of 2022 compared with the same period last year amid chip shortages and intermittent lockdowns in China, and sales fell by nearly 20% in the second quarter. JD Sports stocks rose 0.4% after the retailer named Andrew Higginson as its new chairman effective Monday, while Tag Immobilien stock fell around 9% after the troubled German real estate company announced it will seek to raise €200 million, or $204 million, with a deeply discounted capital increase. And oil prices wobbled on Friday, with the associated demand destruction continuing to weigh on US crude prices. US crude inventories hit two-month highs last week, according to Thursday's data from the Energy Information Administration, with stockpiles at just over 8 million barrels. U.S. crude futures traded 2.1% higher at $104.83 a barrel, while the Brent contract lifted $107.08, and both benchmarks fell to near three-month lows on Wednesday, while Brent's $10.73 drop on Tuesday was the third biggest for the contract since it started trading in 1988. Share markets across Asia trimmed their gains on Friday afternoon as former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, the longest-serving leader of modern Japan, was gunned down on Friday while campaigning for a parliamentary election, shocking a country where guns are tightly controlled and political violence is almost unthinkable. Abe, at 67, was pronounced dead around 5.5 hours after the shooting in the city of Nara. Police arrested a 41-year-old man and said the weapon was a homemade gun. "I'm simply speechless over the news of Abe's death," Prime Minister Fumio Kishida, Abe's prodigy, told reporters. "This attack is an act of brutality that happened during the elections, the very foundation of our democracy, and is absolutely unforgivable." Japan's Nikkei 225 index cut its advance to 0.1% on the news from a peak of 1.5% earlier. It ended at 26,527, and the Japanese yen rose as much as 0.5% following the incident. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index was up 0.38% to 21,725, while the Shanghai Composite Index was down 0.25% to 3,356, despite news that China could deliver a 1.5 trillion yuan, or about a $220 billion stimulus to boost growth, adding to market expectations of an economic recovery. The retreat in shares across Asia was a knee-jerk reaction by markets, which typically happens when something like this occurs, said Shane Oliver, head of investment strategy at AMP Capital. While Abe was seen as one of Japan's best leaders in decades, this event won't change the direction of economic and monetary policy in Japan, so I can't see it having a sustained impact on Asian stock share markets. Australian shares were stronger on Friday following a rebound in commodity prices that boosted the local resource sector, lifting the benchmark index to its best week in nearly 4 months. The S&P ASX 200 advanced 0.5% to 6,678, taking its weekly gain to 2.1%. That's the best since mid-March. The Australian exchange has advanced in 4 out of its last 5 sessions. Energy stock jumped 2.1% and materials 1.2% following reports that China was putting in that stimulus, with the cash expected to be used for infrastructure spending to stimulate growth. Mineral resources added 4.6% to $46.88. Beach Energy climbed 4.3% to $1.71. And Pilbara Minerals rose 6.8% to $2.35. The local technology sector firmed 0.8%, tracking a strong lead from Wall Street, where the Nasdaq rallied 2.3%. Life360 jumped 14.3% to $4.15. Novonix rose 4.7% to $2.46. And Megaport climbed 3.3% to $6.55. In company news, St Barbara jumped 9.6% to 91 cents on news that it met its full-year production guidance, and its June quarter cash balance rose 24% to $98 million compared with the March quarter. Magellan, though, declined 3% to $11.90 after reporting that investors pulled a further $5.2 billion from its funds as assets under management fell to $61.3 billion over the June quarter. Rival GQG Partners, though, reported a decline in assets under management to $86.7 billion US from $94.6 billion over June, but the firm said it benefited from $2.8 billion from client inflows over the quarter. The stock fell 4.1% to $1.28. Australia's trade surplus hit a record $16 billion in May, bolstered by surging demand and record prices for commodities, including coal and gas, though fuel imports also jumped 23% amid soaring global energy prices. The trade surplus was up 20% on the prior month, according to the ABS data, and came in well ahead of market expectations of $10.8 billion. Exports were up more than almost 10%, while imports rose almost 6%. The value of Australian coal exports in May exceeded iron ore for the first time since 2009. But ANZ economic Madeleine Dunk said while the May result was strong, the Reserve Bank's commodity price tracker suggested a softening in June. Looking further ahead, we think rising global interest rates are likely to curtail demand and trim the trade surplus from its current heights, particularly as talks of demand destruction in commodity markets has picked up and fears of a US recession are rising. The two main drivers of the May rise were coal and liquefied natural gas, which were trading near record levels due to the war in Ukraine. The value of coal exports rose 20.4% in May and is up a 299% over the past year, while LNG exports rose by 11.8% in the month and are up by 118.9% over the past year. In dollar terms, the value of coal exports were larger than the value of iron ore exports in May for the first time since April 2009, CBA senior economist Belinda Allen said. Both thermal coal and LNG are both used as an energy source globally, and sanctions against Russia are having a large impact. In addition to the strong May result, coal export earnings were revised higher for April, up by $2.9 billion. Iron ore exports rose by 2.8% in May, but were down by 18.5% over the past year. Fears of a global economic downturn and China's COVID-zero policy have pushed down prices recently. We expect China to reduce steel output later this year, similar to what occurred in 2021. As a result, we expect further falls in the price of iron ore from here, Ms. Allen said. The resumption of international travel is also aggravating the trade data. Travel-related service exports rose by 10.1%. Those are offshore tourists, of course, but remain about 40% of the pre-COVID levels. And travel services imports, how travelling overseas is recorded, lifted by 15.6% in May, but are at just 70% of December 2019 levels. And the benchmark ASX 200 has suffered its biggest monthly decline since March 2020 after falling 8.77% in June, according to S&P Dow Jones data. As fear about aggressive monetary policy tightening and the risk of a recession gripped the market, the index also recorded a quarterly drop of 11.9%. That's the largest since the first quarter of 2020. Materials were the worst performing sector during this period, with a 12.4% fall over the month, closely followed by a decline of 11.87% for financial services. The S&P ASX 200 consumer staples sector was the sole Australian segment to finish the month higher, rising by just 0.21%, they said. In the second quarter, energy and utilities managed to finish in the black, rising 2% apiece, and are the sole sectors up so far this year. Information technology extended its dismal record with June's 11% decline. It's down 27% in the second quarter and 37% so far in 2022. The next worst performing sector in June was the real estate sector, down 10.42%. Consumer discretionary is down 7.32%. Utilities down 6.79%. Industrials down 4.26%. Communication services down 3.59%. Healthcare down 3.09%. And energy down 0.27%. And on a quarterly basis, real estate suffered a drop of 17.76%, with double-digit declines also seen in materials, down 16.07%, consumer discretionary is down 14.92%, financials down 13.74%, and communication services down 10.12%. Looking at the major indices, the S&P ASX 20 was down 8.12%, the ASX 50 was down 8.15%, and both managed to slightly outperform the ASX 200 last month. The ASX 100 also posted a loss of 8.45%, and the ASX 300 moved 8.97% lower. And meanwhile, the S&P ASX Emerging Companies Index dropped by 18.58%, while the S&P ASX Small Ordinaries Index lost 13.09%, and the Mid-Cap 50 declined by 10.34%. And the S&P people also drew attention to falls seen in many of the fixed income indices tracked by the S&P Dow Jones indices across both Australia and New Zealand in June. Our regional fixed income indices generally finished the month and quarter lower than they started, with cash-like bank bills providing a rare exception in both Australia and New Zealand. Inflation-linked bonds suffered most in both countries as recessionary fears reduced demand for inflation protection. And in crypto, Bitcoin increased slightly despite renewed strength of the US dollar index, the DXY, and the spoofing on major exchanges was adding to the chances of the latest move actually being a bit of a fake out. It sat at 21,555 at the time of writing, down 0.62%, having been up 12%, while Ether was down 2.12% to 1,212. But with the DXY going parabolic, Bitcoin going up a bit, and people getting euphoric and calling for 40K probably isn't that sensible. Not a single bullish sign actually supports the move up, and prices are still really sitting at around 21,000 to 22,000 for Bitcoin. The DXY stood at 107.01 at the time of writing, marking a new 20-year high, and US dollar strength is traditionally inversely correlated with crypto asset performance, and this also explains the weakness of other currencies, including the Aussie, which was at 68.59, up 0.32%. So standing back, the critical question is recession here? Is recession likely? Or are we going to escape? Well, at the moment, the signs are not clear. Of course, the Atlanta Fed has already called a recession, and the official data will be coming later. So it's too soon to say. My own perspective would be expect more falls ahead, expect more volatility, and probably by the time we go into September, October, the markets will still be somewhat lower. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.